This episode of Talk Central is brought to you by Pinnacle, Africa's top ICT distribution business, delivering the exceptional every time.
I'm Richard van den Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 227 for the week starting 22 July 2018.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, SA's premier tech news website and podcast network.
On Talk Central this week, layoffs on the cards at Internet Solutions.
Also this week, Stephen van Coller to take the reins at EOH. The EU imposes a massive fine on Google. Tebow Touch is launching a video streaming platform. And Project Loon signs its first deal for internet balloons in Kenya.
It's Sunday. We're live on live at techcentral.co.za and it's time to talk everything tech.
Oh, welcome to the show. How's it, Rehat?
How's it, Duncan?
Very good, thanks. Very, very good. Lots of news this week. It's been a busy one, actually. Quite a lot.
Not all good, unfortunately.
Not all good, no. But we'll get to that in a moment. Let's do the quiz first, though.
Certainly. The first question: Tebow Touch revealed in an interview with Tech Central this week that he plans to launch a video streaming platform. What will it be called?
And MTN announced that it will sell which subsidiary operation for 260 million euros.
Third question, Stephen van Coller is joining EOH as its new group CEO. Which company has he resigned from to take on this role?
And how much did the EU fine Google this week over alleged anti-competitive abuses around the Android operating system?
And the final question, which South African company is a technology partner for the Tour de France?
That's our quiz. As always, we'll get to the answers at the end of the show. Just a reminder, we record live on Sundays at 1 p.m. and you can take part in the show. Send us a WhatsApp voice note to the number 071-999-1111. That's 071-999-1111. And we'll include you in either the show live today or if you send it post-show, we'll include it in our next show. So keep those voice notes coming. We look forward to hearing from you. But let's talk about this week's news. Yeah, let's start with the bad news, Richard, and that's Internet Solutions announcing this week that they are going to be retrenching, or it's likely that they're going to be retrenching employees. I first got wind of this late last month, and I put it to the MD, Saki Masaikos, and he declined to comment, saying they don't comment on market speculation. I had only one source for the story at the time, so I decided not to run it, but got some further information from other sources during the course of this week. And put it to him again, and he confirmed that there's a restructuring going on at the company, and this may or is very likely to lead to job losses. He didn't say, they said they're still busy with the process. They don't know how many positions are going to be affected, but my sources are saying that it could affect up to 200 people, and that letters have already been sent to various employees. I think especially in the technical support division department. And they're being asked to reapply for their positions. Never great news. I think Didata went through a process of redundancies last year or the year before last. So I think the group itself is finding the going a bit tough out there. There's been quite a lot of retrenchments around the industry over the last little while. And I guess a sign that the economy is not doing that well. And also that the competition in the ICT space is particularly tough at the moment.
Yeah, certainly these companies need to kind of tighten those belts. I think everybody needs to. Unfortunately, when it comes to something like this, it does affect livelihoods. It's never a good thing, unfortunately. But companies also, I guess every few years, companies do go, whatever the financial situation is, they do go through a kind of spurts of, kind of having to restructure or, kind of just reshape their business. The sign of a business being agile and moving and growing and doing things.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
As sad as what it may be, yeah.
It is very unfortunate, and it is no doubt partially due to the tough economy, but I think it's also to do with the aggressive competition that we're seeing in the ISP market. Fiber being deployed aggressively, new players coming into the market. I think Secom Business has had a big impact on margins for some of these players. They're competing directly in that enterprise ISP market. So yeah, you have to be nimble. You have to cut the fat, and I think that's what's happening at Internet Solutions.
And I think tech in general too. I mean, if you think about tech making business, so who always talk about AI and these clever technologies that's just making companies work more efficiently, you know, that also has repercussions, you know. Unfortunately, jobs do get impacted. I'm not saying that's the cause here.
Yeah.
But if you see how technology is making certain tasks much easier and automated, support and that kind of thing is one of them. I've seen a few companies changing their support structure to an automated platform or to an online platform where they have fewer staff managing more requests. So, yeah, sign of the times.
Yeah, I don't think there's too much more to be said on internet solutions. We'll obviously keep a close eye on the story and see how it develops, and will there be some further communication from the company. Tough times at IS. It's unfortunate, but I guess these things do happen from time to time in even the best companies. So let's move on. This next story is really interesting. Stephen van Coller, he used to run the corporate and investment bank rather at Absa. He then joined MTN about 2 years ago, and he's filled various roles there. I think he was the head of digital, vice president for digital services or something along those lines. I think that's what he might be now. He was, I think, brought in to head up mergers and acquisitions. But he has he resigned from MTN this week after just 2 years in the job, and he's joining EOH as its new CEO. Interesting move. We know EOH said a few weeks back that they were in talks with someone with a great deal of experience in the I think they said in the corporate finance space with some background in ICT. Stephen van Coller was very well paid, very well remunerated at MTN. I had a look at their 2017 annual report, and if you include all of his benefits and everything, he was paid 20 million rand in the 2017 financial year. So I'd imagine that EOH is paying him some good money to come across. There's a lot of work that needs to be done at EOH. We all know what's happened to the share price over the last 18 months. And yeah, EOH is going through a major restructuring. They've announced they're going to split into two businesses, one called EOH, which will house the old, call them legacy IT businesses, and a new business that will focus on fast-growing areas of the market, and also be the sort of lead vehicle for any further mergers and acquisitions, merger and acquisition activity that they do. And that's going to be headed up by Zunaid Mayet, who was the former group CEO who resigned just a couple of months ago. So there's this new EOH Holdings entity, whose two investments will be EOH and Nextech, which is the new venture that Zunaid is going to head up. And Stephen van Coller is going to come in and take over management or leading the EOH Holdings business. Interesting move. The share price, the market clearly liked the news, because on the day it was announced, the share price rallied by 22% in one day.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Arguably, the share had been massively sold off. I think investors had gotten very agitated and disillusioned about EOH and some of the reports that had been coming out there about some of its subsidiaries and dealings in government and dodgy deals and all that sort of thing, especially around the CGT group of companies led by Keith Keating, which was an acquisition they made and have now reversed out of. But there have been questions about corporate governance and whether it's being applied correctly at the organization. They've got some big challenges, and they need to win back investor confidence. So share price up 22%. It actually went up 6% the day before Stephen van Coller's appointment was made known, which does make you wonder whether there was any insider trading going on. I do wonder if the JSE is going to look at that. The markets welcomed it. I don't know Stephen van Coller. I've never met him. Not even in his context at MTN, so I can't really comment on, give my views on the guy. But he's seems to be very well regarded, and has his history is mainly in banking. I think he was at Deutsche Bank before he joined Absa, and then a 2 year stint at MTN. It's not clear whether he really understands the ICT services space, though. Clearly, he would have got some insight working at MTN. But probably not into the guts of what it takes to be a traditional IT services business. Although he would have obviously worked with companies in the various roles he's held over the years. And had an understanding of it. And perhaps you don't need to be an IT expert to run a holdings company at this sort of level.
Depends on how good your staff is, your supporting staff, I guess.
Yeah. But I will be reading the next EOH annual report, which is where they obviously disclose remuneration with a great deal of interest, because I think they're going to be paying this guy the big bucks. The big bucks indeed. Interesting move. EOH was clearly overvalued. Undervalued. It fell all the way down to 25 Rand. If you think that 2 years ago it was trading at about 180 Rand a share. So it lost over 80% of its value over that period. Bounced now up to around the 42 Rand level. May still be a buy, I don't know. Certainly not taking any chances on it. It was incredible to see the value destruction that happened there. I think it's a combination of investor jitters, the collapse in investor confidence in South Africa, coupled with all the state capture allegations that were reported in the media, the Gupta leaks, emails, etc., which EOH got itself caught up in. And I think investors just took fright and said, we're not going to touch this thing. Get out. But maybe there's some sanity and some stability returning to EOH now. And maybe the shares are buy. I don't know. I'm not an expert on these things. I guess we'll have to see the next set of financial results, which is due out in the next couple of months, to get a clearer picture of whether all the troubles that they've had over the last little while have led to management taking their eyes off the ball. And whether that's going to translate into weak numbers. I think the whole market is anxiously awaiting those next set of financial results. But, Richard, I think we need to take a quick break for our podcast listeners, for our live listeners. We'll be back in a moment.
BitCo is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. bitco.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Are you a search engine? Because you found me.
I feel we have a strong connection.
Well, you're pretty fly for a Wi-Fi. Should we drop it like a hotspot and head back to yours so we can show Max and snuggle? Let's get giga with it.
But I don't have fiber. Don't get caught in 50 shades of delay. Broadband your horizons and switch to Vox's super fast, super reliable fiber network. Experience the momentum. Connect your world. Visit us at vox.co.za/fiber.
Well, welcome back to the show. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan?
Very good, thanks. So, did you see the story about the EU fining Google 4.3 billion euros?
Yeah, it's not a small amount of change, eh?
It's the biggest regulatory fine that the EU has ever imposed by a long margin, bigger than anything they ever levied on Microsoft, for example.
Sure.
And this is all to do with the way that, as I understand it, that Google controls the Android operating system, requiring handset manufacturers to include all of their apps and services on Android phones. So things like Gmail and Photos and all the other apps that Google creates. Now, the EU is taking... Sorry?
No, that's the ecosystem, right? That's what their offering is on the Android platform.
Yeah, and they give it away for free, which it's incredible that they've been fined $4.3 billion, or euros rather, for something they give away for free. I think the fine is ludicrous, but, the EU, they love to regulate and love to impose anti-competitive fines. I see Donald Trump came out and tweeted about it and said that this is absolutely unacceptable. I'm not sure what he's going to be able to do about it.
I don't know if he should be getting involved in this conversation. We don't need that kind of. But it is a bit ridiculous, I think. Especially if you look at what the product is. They've built this as a free platform. They're not restricting operators. Anybody can. I mean, that's why we often criticize manufacturers for putting stuff on there that we don't want.
Yeah.
Any smartphone manufacturer can still make what they want with that operating system.
Yeah.
So I'm not quite sure you know, I guess just because by default it's on there, but that doesn't seem like a strong enough argument if the product that you're giving away is a free product.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I mean, you and I, and I suspect many consumers, want the vanilla Android Google experience. We want those apps.
It's a good service.
Yeah, those apps are fantastic. I think what the EU is arguing is that there needs to be great, that, you know, they're dominant in this platform, 90% of the market. There needs to be a greater ability for phone manufacturers and consumers to install apps of their choosing. And the argument I think that the EU is making is that you buy an Android phone, and if Gmail is the default app on there, then most consumers will just continue to use Gmail as the default app. I'm not sure that argument holds, though. If a better app comes along, people will start to use it.
Mm. But what about a company like Apple? I mean, surely they would fall to the same points that they are faulting Google on, because if you buy an Apple device, you know, everything you get by default is on there.
Yeah.
You know, mail, browser, everything.
In fact, Apple in some respects is worse, because even if you have Chrome installed on your iPhone, for example, you click a link somewhere, it'll open up Safari, not Chrome. Mm. They force you to use Safari, whereas on Android, you can set your defaults. On Apple, you can't.
Mm. Well, maybe it's because Apple's also selling their own hardware, so they're selling. But that still doesn't make sense, because even if you argue it that way, it doesn't. You know, phone manufacturers can still do what they want. They can do a stock vanilla Android with their own software on it.
And
that's weird.
I don't know. It just strikes me as regulators get poking their nose into something that they really shouldn't be poking their nose into. The market will sort itself out. I mean, we saw that in the desktop browser market. I mean, they went after Microsoft. You know, who's the dominant desktop browser on – what is the dominant desktop browser on Windows now? It's not Edge or Internet Explorer. It's Google's Chrome.
And Edge is trying really hard to keep customers. I've been installing new Windows machines in the last few days, and every time I install – you know, when you install Google first time, you open up Edge and search for Google Chrome so you can get the download.
Yeah.
It's got specific ads targeting you. That's saying, you know, it's obviously a faster browser, et cetera.
Yeah, they do that. Yeah. I mean,
Are you sure you want to change?
Yeah, this is a great browser for Windows 10. So Microsoft is doing it as well, although you can change it. They try and make it as unenticing as possible.
But it still comes built in with it, right? I mean, Android, you know, it's the same thing. It just comes as an option. With Windows, you don't really have an option when you install for the first time. It's there.
Well, yeah, it's the same on. I mean, it's the same on Android phones nowadays. I mean, Android phones used to come with the sort of default Android browser, which was never very good. They now come with all the Google services, which includes Chrome. But frankly, Chrome is a great browser, so I like to use it. If there was my Android device, if there was another browser that was better in some way, I wouldn't think twice. I'd switch to it. But the fact is, Google and Chrome on Android is the best browser on that platform.
Oh yeah. Look, I would hate to see them make things more complicated, but a simple solution would seem to be, especially in an age of internet-connected devices, obviously in places where it's not, where you don't have a prevalence in internet connectivity, it might be an issue. But what about just giving them an option when you boot up your phone for the first time out of the box? Please pick your browser.
What the EU would like to see happen. You know, give consumers a range of options. You want a browser.
But it's still going to be choosing Chrome, right?
A lot of people will, yeah.
Google Chrome. I mean, it'll be the first option.
And the fact that people have chosen Chrome for Windows as it's now the biggest browser on Windows tells you that the market will sort itself out. Chrome brought out a better browser than Internet Explorer on Windows PCs, and people moved to it. The market sorts itself out. Sure, there's some people who still use Internet Explorer. They tend not to be tech savvy. They tend to be, how do I put this delicately? they tend to be of an older generation. And it doesn't matter. I mean, they're fine with it. Why force them to have to go and choose a browser now?
In fact, if anything, I would put the blame on the company that manufactures the phone for making the choice. If they, you know what I'm saying? Like, don't blame the guy that's providing the software for free. Whoever is implementing that, I'm not saying go after them, but like, surely the blame isn't just with one business. It's an entire chain of things that happen.
Yeah.
I mean, why did some companies get it right so well, and others obviously mess it up, and there's just too much bloatware on the device. And the customer talks, and they don't buy the device.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd hate a situation where the operator is deciding what's going to be installed on my phone when I receive it. I mean, they already have too much control. There's already too much bloatware on these things.
Yeah, they're the last people that should be touching the phone.
If you if you buy a phone from Vodacom or MTN in particular, those two operators, their bloatware is all over that thing. I hate it. I don't want their software on my phone. If I want their lousy app, I'll go and download it from the Play Store. I don't want it to be on the phone, and I don't want to force me. I don't want them to make it a system app, so I can't uninstall it, which is what they do.
And also, at which point do you draw the line with technology? Where I mean, especially with a company like the Google ecosystem, Alphabet, where they have all these products under the umbrella, they work very well together, which is one of the reasons why people like myself enjoy using Chrome, because, you know, it's a trusted system. Gmail works well. Chrome syncs beautifully with everything. I've lost my train of thought there, but
it's consumer choice. It's about consumer choice at the end of the day. I mean, I use Vivaldi as my desktop browser because I prefer it to Chrome. I used Chrome for many years. I think Chrome has become a bit bloated, and it's still a great browser. I'd use it over Internet Explorer any day, and probably use it over Firefox as well. But Vivaldi, I really like some of the features in it. It's a power users browser, and I've switched to it, and it's called Consumer Choice, and these things are free anyway. So I really do think the EU is butting in where it's not wanted. If you look back at the Microsoft antitrust situation back in the late 1990s, where regulators were going after them, I can't even remember the details of that. It had something to do with Internet Explorer on Windows as the default browser. I forget the details. But that mark, you know, they were fined, and they were you know, told they were bad and wrapped over the knuckles. But ultimately, that issue resolved itself through the free market, through both Firefox and through particularly through Google competing with Chrome. And the market resolved itself, and consumers decided what the outcome was going to be. And Microsoft is now a small player, relatively small player in the browser market, and they're desperately trying to maintain and grow market share against a competitor who's now significantly bigger than them in browsers. So, I don't know, let the market sort itself out. If consumers are not happy with Android and the way it's being pushed onto them, someone will come up with another operating system. You can be sure of it. And there are other manufacturers looking at it. Samsung is developing Tizen. I don't know if it's any good. I've never used it. I just feel the European Union are just a bunch of bureaucrats who are milking these companies for all it's worth, and what they're doing is actually going to have very little impact on consumers at the end of the day. In fact, make consumers' lives more miserable because they're forcing things onto consumers that they don't necessarily want.
Why don't they spend all this money doing these kind of this process of law, and then just rather educate their citizens, you know, just spend that money on some clever ads and show them how to install other operating systems or browsers if they want to do that. And I'm being serious when I say that. There's, I think, much better ways to educate people, because that ultimately is where the power does lie, like you said. And if the consumer makes it the right, or if the consumer makes a choice, it has that impact ultimately for where the business decides to take the product.
I just think the EU should butt out of business and let these companies compete, pretty much like the Americans do. Although the Americans also have antitrust, and I think they did unfairly go after Microsoft in the late 1990s. But they take a much more of a hands-off approach than the European Union. Anyway, I think we've exhausted that story. So I had a great podcast interview earlier this week with Thibaut Touch, formerly of Metro FM, and he's now running Touch HD, an online radio station. Really interesting guy. Very interesting guy. I didn't know. I found out for the first time in the podcast that he moved to the States when he was a teenager, I think 17 or 18 years old. He finished his schooling in the U.S., and the people he stayed with were the parents of Grace Jones, the artist. And when he finished his school, he moved to New York, and he stayed with Grace Jones in New York, I think in Manhattan. And he really inserted himself into the show business world there, hustled a lot, and got a show on the SABC through Metro. He was working for Def Jam Records. Eventually came back to South Africa and joined Metro. I think he was hosting the breakfast show on Metro. And then he struck out with Gareth Cliffe to form a co-venture with Gareth Cliffe called Touch Central, I think. And then he left that to start Touch HD on his own. I'm not sure what the mechanics of that were, why he left Cliff Central, but he did, and he started Touch HD. I don't know how well Touch HD's done. If I look at the most popular podcasts in iono.fm, he's right up there, so I think he's doing well. And yeah, he broke the news with us this week that he's launching a video streaming platform, similar sort of style to Netflix apps and you know, watch on your TV. In 4K, and he's going to be working. He's secured a lot of funding, apparently, from the IDC, the Industrial Development Corporation, to develop local content. And he's going to be launching this in just a couple of months' time. I think early October is the official launch. It's risky. Going into the content game, streaming game, launching a new brand is an extremely expensive affair. So he's brave. I wouldn't do it.
It's great to see this. We need more of this, though, because these are the platforms that's ultimately going to be main sources of consumption alongside YouTube and Netflix and those things. People are going to these, what do you call them, micro or niche audiences or niche kind of streaming services or content streaming services, you know, that you want to tune into because you know where it's coming from. You want to consume something directly from that kind of brand or that flavor of brand. So I think it's got a bright future. It's just we need one big one to take off and really hit those numbers.
Yeah.
And then some big company's going to come by and buy them. That's usually the case, unfortunately.
Yeah, I know, indeed. It's a risky thing to do, but... yeah, I'll be watching it with a great deal of interest. So the venture, as he announced in our podcast, is called THD. A play on Touch HD. It's going to be coming to – there are going to be apps for Android, iOS. It's going to be available in 4K, so you can watch it on your 4K TV in your lounge. And lots of original content. I think the key is going to be the original content, which is a very expensive thing to produce. But he's very excited. He's got shows lined up, and he's keen to get launched. I mean, October is a very tight time frame, so I presume he's been working on this for a while. THD, I look forward to seeing more, and I'll definitely be at the launch and be reporting from there and providing more details on what he has planned.
Sounds good.
So, Rehat, you've got something to talk about, the Loon, Project Loon, which is the Google Internet Balloon Project, right?
Quite exciting stuff. It's Alphabet's Project X division has announced its first commercial deal. And interestingly enough, that's with Telkom Kenya. And now, according to Joe Mukuru, Kenya's Information Communication and Technology Minister, this is a technology that they'll be introducing that the license operators will be able to use. So what they want to do is in places where infrastructure can't be deployed cost effectively or within a good time frame, they want to cover massive areas of the country with Project Loon, which is essentially antennas hanging off balloons at 60,000 feet above the ground, which is pretty impressive stuff.
I didn't think these things were stationary, though. I thought they moved all the way around the planet. And
they do. Oh, well, they would control them within an environment, within a specific... what they say is at 60,000 feet, there's a specific wind air movement that keeps them, obviously, within the place, within the areas that they want to keep them. And there must be some kind of control mechanism, I'm sure.
I thought that really actually pulled back on Project Loon. I seem to recall reading something about a year ago saying that they were not going to be pushing it as aggressively as they were.
Well, I think it doesn't make sense everywhere. If you look at where they first deployed it with in Peru, following those massive floods, when they first launched it, because they needed to get communication down to the people, I think they managed to connect like 200,000 people or something. So in these very specific use cases, and I think like in Kenya where they want to cover, massive parts of the country with cell phone or data connectivity, this is a very practical short-term solution, I'm sure. And as the technology matures, potentially becoming a permanent solution.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I look forward to seeing what the outcome of this project is. Do you remember a couple of years ago there was one of these Project Loon balloons that came down in the Karoo and some farmer found it and was scratching his head.
Thought
it was a UFO or something, yeah. That was a fun story. I think they did ship that back to Google eventually.
Well, interesting, just in closing on that story, that they're doing 4G speeds on that now. So,
really?
They're not necessarily going to deploy this in Kenya, but they've managed to get up to 4G speeds using the Loon technology, which is very good.
Interesting. I wonder how it's going to be priced. Have they said anything about pricing yet?
No, nothing. Cost of the project, costing for the consumers, and nothing has been announced yet.
Okay.
And there's no time frame for it either. So it's kind of, at least, it seems like the ball's just started rolling.
Okay. All right. Well, I think that takes care of this week's news. Let's move on to our regular features. Our winner this week is Bob van Dyk, who is the chief executive of Naspers, who is literally rolling in the money. The Naspers published its annual report, which included its remuneration report on Friday, and I went through that in some detail. If you look at his long-term share incentive awards for this financial year and include his salary and bonuses, he got about 160 million rand. But if you then include share options that vested this year, so options and share appreciation rights, he made, if that's the correct term for it, because I don't think he would have sold those shares yet, but he is eligible to sell them, as I understand it, once those shares have vested. He, in effect, made 1.5 billion rand.
Wow.
So that's one high-paid executive. Now, I must emphasize that he obviously had to pay for some of those options. I don't know the details of how much he paid for them. Obviously, there's tax implications in there. He, as far as I'm aware, hasn't sold those shares. So it's on paper only. But still, 1.5 billion rand, most of which is in the form of share options and share appreciation rights. Incredible stuff. I'm not sure how happy Naspers shareholders are about all of this, but he's our winner this week. He's certainly making a lot of dough. And our loser this week, for all the reasons we have explained already, is the EU for its interference in Google's business and its insane fine on the company. And that's our winner and loser of the week. What's your pick this week, Rahat?
So I've been playing with a very, very sexy little notebook this week. It's the Dell XPS 13-inch
2-in-1.
This is a new one, Core i7. And I must be honest with you, I never thought I'd really like a small notebook like this. But there's just something about it. Now, you know the XPS range is beautifully designed to begin with.
Yeah.
You know, it's got a very specific look and feel, like the MacBooks have for their own range. But the Dells just do it so well, probably better than many other pieces that I've seen in this caliber. But the 2-in-1 13-inch is obviously a 2-in-1 device, which means the screen can flip around, so it turns into a tablet-like device. It's got a 1.6 gigahertz processor, 8 gigabytes of RAM, Intel 615 or 651 graphics processor. I'm not sure which one. I can't remember what the numbering was.
I presume you can spec this thing and put more RAM in and all the rest of it.
Look, it is very limited in what you can do. You can't upgrade this to like a 30 gig. I think you may be able to push it up to 16 gigabytes. If you spec it out at checkout, so to speak, you'll be able to do that, but there's no aftermarket upgrades on this, I know.
Okay.
It's quite a thin notebook. I mean, if you look at it and it closes, it's akin to the thinnest MacBook Air style. You know, it's very thin, very light. It's really beautiful. And it's got a carbon fiber.
And it's that thin, and it's a 2-in-1, so you can flip the screen around and use it as a tablet.
Yeah, so with Windows 10, obviously that is actually a fantastic experience. And the screen on this thing is also pretty good. It's a very high resolution screen. There's two options you can choose from. There's a 1920 by 1080 option and a Quad HD version, which is 3200 by 1800.
Nice.
Unfortunately, that's not the one that I've got here. Okay. Yeah, that would be the one. In terms of portability and just, I mean, it's a pretty powerful machine. It's got the Core i7. Even though it's a 1.6 gigahertz, you also have to keep in mind that you're looking at a really long battery life here. I haven't tested it completely yet. I think I'll probably be able to get 5 or 6 hours from my usage over the week so far. So, definitely worth checking out. It's not the cheapest notebook, but you are paying for a lot of benefits here. It's a very thin bezel around that screen. So when you flip it around, it really feels like a tablet. There's no thick edges around it.
Yeah. Just don't drop it.
Yeah, for sure. Probably the only thing that I would find fault with on it is the lack of connectivity in terms of USB. Obviously, USB port simply won't fit on here. So there's USB-C and a display port and a micro SD slot, which is handy for photographers who want to get their cards. Well, the micro SD if you use micro SD and an SD card adapter. There is a 3.5mm audio jack, which is great. And overall, look, a fantastic product to use in a business environment. This is the kind of thing I want to be carrying around with me. I won't be editing videos on this, but it does everything else.
Lightweight, even business traveler device.
Yes. Look, I can run Photoshop on here, and it does basic editing that I want to do beautifully. But I wouldn't do anything from a video editing point of view. Obviously, it's not built for that. But fantastic in a business environment, I think. I'm quite tempted to get something like this.
So my pick this week is a pair of headphones, in-ear headphones from Jabra. I've looked at some of their devices, their earphones before, and I'm very impressed with the quality. But these are being billed as a direct competitor to the AirPods from Apple, and they're called the Elite 65T. I've played around with them and listened to a few hours of music, and they are really, really, really good. They fit comfortably and snugly in the ear, although I must say after a few hours they do start to hurt a bit. I haven't tried the AirPods, and I'm sure the AirPods are the same with all in-ear headphones.
Anything in-ear, your ear normally gets tired after a few hours.
Yeah, but the audio quality is fantastic. The strength of the wireless signal is brilliant. Certainly looking at a lot of the reviews online, reviewers are saying that these are a worthy alternative to the AirPods, if not even better. They come with little adjustable ear cushion bits. I don't know what you technically call them, depending on the size of your ear, so you just need to make sure you put the right ones in. They're sweat resistant, although these are not the sports ones. They do sports ones as well, which are fully waterproof, and you can go running in the rain with them. These ones are sweat resistant, so they're warranted against damage from sweat when you're in the gym or something like that.
Nice.
They're very nice. I think they're about 3.5. I'd have to check the price, but I think they're in that ballpark.
It's about 3.5 online, yeah.
I'll have a detailed review of them sometime in the next couple of weeks. But so far, I'm pretty impressed. So I thought I'd pick them as my pick on Talk Central this week.
Definitely looks a lot nicer than those Apple earpods. I don't know what it is about that white thing hanging out of your ear. It just doesn't look right.
Yeah, you're right. It does look.
They should have
odd.
Made that in a different color. They should have made it like this darker gray that these Jabra ones are. It looks very cool.
Yeah. Yeah, obviously white headphones is Apple's trademark, so I guess that's why they went that route. The rumor is, by the way, that Apple's going to be announcing quite a few headphone products at the next keynote, including Apple-branded over-ear headphones, which would be interesting.
I wonder if that's going to be with or without Beats.
Without, apparently. Without the Beats name. Okay. Yeah. So hopefully they'll be better than Beats, because I'm not particularly impressed with the quality of Beats headphones, I must tell you.
I've got a pair of Beats headphones, in-ear ones that I've got many, many years ago, and I must be honest with you, they're still one of my favorite. I like the additional bass that they put into the tunes, so I guess it's all depending on what you like.
I bought a pair of Beats over-ear headphones from the Apple store in the US about 3 or 4 years ago. I never found them terribly comfortable. I should have done more research and bought a pair of Bose or something at the time, or Sennheisers. But I bought these impulse buy and sitting in an Apple store in Las Vegas.
And, as you do in an Apple store in Las Vegas.
Indeed. I was never particularly impressed with the quality. These were the Monster headphones, I think they were called. They were blue. The build quality wasn't great. The audio quality wasn't great. And a couple of years ago, they just broke. I sat on them or anything, they just broke. So I will not be buying another pair of Beats headphones. Again, I've had a very bad experience with them.
Oh, they're certainly not worth the money, that's for sure. I mean,
they're expensive for what they are. If they were cheap, they're cheap. They're cheap headphones, yeah.
Well, that's the thing. If they were much more value for money, you know, like the Skull Candy, that would have been a different thing. But
Exactly. But, I'm a Bose man through and through now. Really good quality from Bose, but Sennheiser also does amazing stuff. I see they just announced a new pair of headphones that's selling at MyTech Direct for I think $35,000. Rand. I haven't heard them, but I also wouldn't be spending that much on a pair of headphones.
Is it worth taking a trip out there just to go and experience them?
Probably. Probably. Oh. I did hear the previous high-end ones, which I think were 22,000. And I presume this is the replacement to those, 35 grand.
Ouch.
Yeah, no, that's too much for a pair of headphones.
Unless
your name is Bob van Dyke, in which case you can afford them.
I think at some point, unless you really can tell all the little things apart, for most people, you know, you just want something really good and loud.
Yeah, for sure. So, anything else we need to do? I think that's
quiz
almost
results.
Our show. That's almost our show this week. Yeah, let's do our quiz results. Let me do the first question. Tiba Touch revealed in an interview with Tech Central this week that he plans to launch a video streaming platform. What's it going to be called? And that's THD.
Second question. MTN announced it will sell which subsidiary operation for 260 million euros? And the answer is MTN Cyprus.
And Stephen Fancola is joining EOH as its new group CEO. Which company has he resigned from to take on the role? And that's MTN Group.
And the fourth question, how much did the EU fine Google this week for alleged anti-competitive abuses around the Android operating system? And the answer is a whopping 4.3 billion euros. And a lot of headphones.
And which South African company is the technology partner for the Tour de France? And that is, of course, Dimension Data. And I had a really good chat this week with the guy who is heading up the technology operations. He was actually at the Tour de France in one of the trucks when I did the podcast with him this week. And he talked about how the technology behind the Tour de France works. I wasn't expecting it to be a great interview, to be honest, perhaps partly because I'm not a huge cycling fan, but it was fascinating. So if you missed that podcast, do go and have a listen to it. And also don't miss the Tebow Touch interview we did earlier this week. That was also very, very interesting. So we're going to add a new feature to the show this week. Hopefully it'll be a weekly feature, but you tell us whether you like it or not. I've recently launched a new podcast on the Tech Central platform called Rock Central. Richard, I know you've had a chance to listen to one or two of those already. And
no, they're awesome. Well done, by the way. They are really great listens.
Thank you. Thank you. The idea is really to have a bit of fun and to showcase. I love rock music, a wide range of rock music from prog, 70s prog, modern prog, classic rock, hard rock, heavy metal, progressive metal, you name it. I enjoy rock music. So I thought, let me turn that passion into a show since we have the platform. And we're fully licensed through the local rights organization, so all legal. And I've recorded two episodes of the Rock Central so far. It's already available through all the main podcasting platforms. So if you're using iTunes or Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, Iono, TuneIn, Overcast. I know I'm going to be missing names here, but it's on most of them, if not all of them by now. Just search Rock Central. That's one word, Rock Central, and you should find it and hit that subscribe button. I'd love to know what you think. But in related to that, I thought what would be fun to do on this show, on us every Sunday, is to record a song of the week. So one week I'd pick one, and the next week Rechard would pick one. Could be anything. Could be a latest track. Could be something that's really caught your attention during the week. So I'm going to kick it off this week with a song from a band called The Pineapple Thief. Really great band. They've been around for quite a long time now. Progressive rock band out of the UK. They've got a new album coming out in, I think at the end of August, called Dissolution. Their last album was absolutely fantastic. If you don't know this band, check them out. Their last album was called Your Wilderness from 2016. But All the Wars and Someone Here Is Missing is also great albums worth checking out. But this is the first track off the new Pineapple Thief album, and it's called Far Below. Until next time, from Rechard and myself. Oh, and keep those WhatsApps coming, by the way. 071-999-1111. From Rechard and myself, until next week. Cheers.
Ciao, ciao.